If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everybody, welcome to a summer edition, although clouds are precariously climbing over us here, and you'll be able to see in the backdrop, hopefully, that we are at the Prince of Denmark pub. You'll see what we did there on Denmark Road. Again, you'll see what we did there to have a little bit of chat about all things Norwich City. I think the last official sit-down pod that we did like this was on the way home from Leeds, and a chat about David Wagner losing his job. Since then, Norwich have hired a new head coach. They made their first, or they're going to make their first summer signing in the next week or so, and there's plenty of bits around to speak about. So welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt and Sam Seaman. Adam Harvey is sat in the background, and we'll bring him in a little bit later for his thoughts on everything. But it's been a few weeks since the season ended. You've just come back, Pad, really. So we're in different. I'm about to go for a little bit of a break, and you've just come back. So feeling suitably refreshed for what's ahead now?
No. How dare you draw parallels between me dealing with a four-year-old and an eight-week-old, and you, I don't know what you're going to be doing on your holidays, Connor. Feet up, watching, playing Football Manager probably, no doubt. No,
what's you? Wrong with that? Got Will still close to the Norwich job?
Yeah, good luck. I've had a very gentle introduction, mainly because it's been fairly quiet this week, hasn't it, after the Cordoba news was confirmed, but kind of expecting that anyway, so wasn't out of the blue. So just adds to the positivity that's around this football club now. With, as you said, the last time we sat down in this sort of setting, David Wagner is hours from being Norwich's head coach. A lot of uncertainty about what next, and we roll it on, and now we have quite an exciting, progressive, forward-thinking appointment in Johannes Thorup. We'll go with that.
I was going to clarify this. Is it Thorup, which I think is like, because if you think of like Marvel, isn't it four? But I had a date or a friend who was partly Danish at school, and he was called that, but he was called Thor. Yeah.
Thorup.
So I think it's Thorup.
Yeah. Well, I mean the man himself, I'm sure will put us straight. I'm sure he's watching this content avidly, him and Glenn. but obviously, irrespective of how we're pronouncing his surname, it feels positive, it feels fresh. Can't profess to know intimately what he's all about and what he did at Norwichland, but know enough that it's going to be radically different from David Wagner and the kind of personnel he was using on the pitch and the style of football as well. So for me, that's a very positive starting point. And then added to now with that first, still to be ratified, obviously, when the transfer window is officially open, I think today week. We're recording here on a Friday afternoon. But Jose Cordoba, and again, and to me, that you wrote a piece today, I think that signals where Norwich are going now. It's not only the appointment of a new head coach and what that says, but it's a player profile that is vastly different to, if we're talking about centre-backs, who they brought in last year, you know, last summer, Shane Duffy, then round about January, Danny Bart. You know, this feels very different. And I can't wait until they come back now, really. You know, very disappointing end to last season, but that feels quite a distance away now, because everything is feels like the wheel is turning towards something that I think, not being a Norwich fan, but I'm pretty sure Norwich fans are looking at it and maybe feeling the same sense of excitement now and optimism about what the future holds. And that can only be a good thing, because, you know, we've drawn a line in the sand now with Wagner and Smith prior to, but that didn't feel very progressive or something that most Norwich fans are probably felt easy about. Yes, of course, they're going to support their team and back them to the hilt, but it was kind of in spite of rather than because of. And whereas this feels very much like Farker and Weber in that first phase of their relationship, where they're trying to do something different, something innovative, try and be ahead of the curve again. And we saw the results of that experiment, so let's hope for more of the same. But no, it feels like we're in a good space now. And we'll see. We'll obviously speak to Johannes and Glenn towards the end of the month, officially, when they're unveiled, and we'll find out a little bit more about what they're all about. But so far, for me, yeah, this feels like we're in a positive space now, and can't wait for the pre-season to swing round.
Not to add confusion over the last name, but me and Chris Lakey, who's our sports editor, we've been having a little bit of a chat over the last few weeks about whether you include the Hoff in the, is it Hoffer up? Is it Hoff tore up? Is it like maybe someone Danish watching can clear that up for us? I'm sure he will when we speak to him. But I've gone by the fact the club just went with tore up / four up, whichever the pronunciation is. So I think that's basically what we'll go for. Sam, Paddy mentioned the words excited and optimistic. Do you share those, given what's happened at Norwich City since probably that the final whistle, really, of what happened at Elland Road?
Yeah, I think it feels fairly positive, and that's probably always the case in pre-season to an extent. But yeah, the extent of the change is significant, given how far are we now away from Leeds? 3 weeks or something like that? And how negative that felt. It feels like it's almost a completely different club by now. Not only the change in head coach, but the sort of older players that they've lost, and bringing in somebody in Jose Cordoba, who obviously is of a younger profile. And I think you wrote a column, and I'd agree that it represents quite often when you bring a certain profile of player in as your first signing of the summer, usually the sort of player that you're then going to bring in over the course of the summer. And last year it was Ashley Barnes, which certainly tells the story of what David Wagner wanted in his team. Now I think with Cordoba, we're seeing what Ben Napper wants from his team. So I think it's pretty exciting. I think Norwich fans are pretty excited about it. It probably will take a level of patience, and it's not the sort of excitement that makes me feel like Norwich are probably going to go and win the league next season. I don't think it's that sort of visceral excitement, but it feels like now they're entering a prolonged project that has clear aims and a clear identity. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they can achieve their goals, because so far, I'd say, to give Napper his props, it looks like they've made a few good decisions, but obviously the proof will be on the pitch. And for that reason, I'm similar to Paddy, and just looking forward to pre-season and seeing what that team looks like on the pitch.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, and it's always difficult, I think, to do this in the season, but certainly thinking over the last few weeks, just thinking to myself, really, and it's like anything, isn't it? We all have a certain taste in what we want to see football wise, and you like what you like, and some people like a 4-4-2 and hitting it long. That's not me personally, and I'm not saying that that's what David Wagner did, but there were a lot of times where I just didn't enjoy kind of the product, really, even in its best form. And again, this is purely personal choice. There's no right or wrong way to do it. As how many promotions has Neil Warnock won? 7, 8, 9. His style of football very different to Russell Martin, and Russell Martin's just got promoted through the Championship, for example. So lots of ways to do it, but it just and maybe this kind of those words, to go back to those, excitement and optimism. I feel like they've been in really short supply at this football club, probably since maybe even before relegation from the Premier League under Dean Smith. It hasn't felt like this for a little while. And whether that is literally just because it's different and people don't know a lot about it, and the unknown is sexy sometimes, but there is excitement and there is optimism, and that's really refreshing compared to probably what we had really certainly throughout last season, which goodness me, how do you even begin to sum that up?
Well, it's hard because there was periods where it was good, and when I say good, I mean in terms of the products, the output, the results. Maybe not the product, but certainly the effectiveness, the start of the season, that block up until Sargent sadly got that injury at Huddersfield. There wasn't too much you would have been unhappy with about that sort of output on the pitch under David Wagner. And then, again, when Sargent came back January onwards, didn't have the ending we wanted. But for that team to take it from where they were in January and threatening to go backwards to galvanise themselves and get themselves into the top six. To do that, they had to beat a lot of good sides in and around them. So I don't think you can necessarily disparagingly write off everything we saw under David Wagner, both last season or even, you know, spanning the first portion of that period when he came in at the back end of, well, halfway through last previous season. So, but underpinning it all for me, it was, and this is where there was no departure from a Dean Smith appointment. Both Smith and Wagner, you package them together as very pragmatic, very conservative in many ways in terms of their output and approach, and it's been bookended by Daniel Farker prior to, and now hopefully, and of course this is very much a hypothetical conversation at the minute because we haven't actually seen yet what a Thorup team looks like in green and yellow, but again, piecing together everything we know about his coaching career and his coaching CV so far, it feels more akin to Farker. And I don't mean in terms of a mirror image of how they will line up on the pitch, what they're striving to do, but something a bit more philosophical, a bit more grounded in a culture and a way of doing things that percolates through all of the club. And importantly for me, and it was pretty visible by the end of the season, but we had that sense all the way through that Napa and Wagner, in the key elements of what it takes to drive a club forward on the football side, were not on the same page. That word alignment, there wasn't alignment between them two. Sydney Van Hooijdonk, what on earth was that about? You had a sporting director bringing him in who talked about, when we had a sit down with him post-January window, about how he was the championship profile of striker they were looking for. Barely kicked a ball, no goals, no starts. Wagner clearly didn't rate him. That's the top and bottom of that. You know, when Sargent was struggling with fitness, when Barnes was struggling with fitness, Sheffield Wednesday away springs to mind, he went to Liam Gibbs off the bench. You know, so they weren't aligned there. There was the other episodes that spring to mind, Wagner talking about not really wanting to see Forshaw and Poeta depart because it thins the squad out at a critical juncture, understanding the financial implications of the decision, but not necessarily, if he'd had his way, it would have agreed with it.
Birmingham as well.
Birmingham, that was my next point. You know, when Napa had been airbrushed out of what it had taken to get that group into the top six and actually throwing in the predecessor in the role, Stuart Webber, and the work that him and Wagner had done this time last summer. So that internal struggle, and I don't want to overplay it, but clearly that was not a club where the key decision-making people on the football side were all on the same page. And you feel now, clearly, because this is Napa's man and a person who's emerged from a very thorough recruitment process, which has been going on months, and we knew that, but that's been confirmed by Thorup. Those talks through his agent, maybe, rather than himself, but with Norwich and with Napa and with Neil Adams, months and months and months. So,
I think Wagner was probably aware of that as
and
well.
And he would have been aware of that, absolutely. Him and Bueller would have been aware of that. So that, for me, is why, to answer your question, feels different now, that this is everybody who matters is all in behind the same flag, effectively, and what they believe in, whether it's recruitment, whether it's a style of play, whether it's what they're trying to do in terms of youth development and reconnect that academy pipeline. Because as much as Wagner blanched at the suggestion that he didn't play young players, and what do we have, Philip Billing at Huddersfield and John Rowe, I think the evidence was to the contrary. You know, you see Liam Gibbs went backwards, Jaden Warner had a little taste of it, then he was farmed out on loan.
Callum Fisher
as well. So, again, for me, in what is now, moving forward, a key pillar of what Thorup and Napa are trying to achieve, that wasn't the case under Wagner. It wasn't the case under Smith. So I think that's probably where it's coming from. It's not necessarily a massive sea change in terms of what we'll see on the pitch, but maybe it's more off the pitch and the alignment off the pitch and how that hopefully all flows into driving this club forward again. Rather than it felt at times under Smith and at times under Wagner that there was almost an internal struggle and they were fighting amongst themselves in certain aspects, which if you're Norwich and you're trying to, you know, emerge from a very competitive championship, you just can't afford to have that. You need zero laser-like focus where everybody is on the same page and everybody is working towards the same goal, and the steps that it takes to get to that goal, they all have bought into that as well. I don't think we could honestly say, and the results prove it, you know, really, under Smith and under Wagner, that wasn't a club who were all moving along at the same pace and towards the same playbook, really. And you know, you're not going to achieve, I don't think, what you need to achieve if you're Norwich with the financial model they've got, if you've got that necessarily dealing with that in terms of internal elements. So that's for me why there's optimism and why there's genuine excitement, because this feels like a throwback to Farker and Weber.
Yes, yeah. Just to pick up 2 points on the back of that about alignment. I don't know if we discussed it. We might have discussed this in the last pod, but as you said, so much has happened. My brain's basically mush at this point. But even in the statement where, you know, the use of words that Napa used, I think he said that Wagner had carried himself with dignity, and dignity's sort of not really it's kind of a word that you associate with maybe going through something that necessarily you don't really want to go through, but you kind of handle yourself anyway. That's kind of what it read to us in terms of me, and he did. And you know, we said it throughout the back end of that season when he was getting results. The way that he carried himself, you know, in terms of interviews, but also with the team and whatnot, was incredibly impressive. And the second one, I think this is maybe nailed onto the point which I'll come on to with Sam, and to almost rewind back to the process. You look at the last three head coaches that Norwich have had: Daniel Farker, very possession-based. Then you go to Dean Smith, who was, as you said, pragmatic, probably tried to almost inject a degree of physicality and athleticism into that team. I remember him using those words a lot. Then you go to David Wagner, who was quite happy for Norwich not to have the ball, and it was about, can we press high? Can we, can we win the ball back in high places? It was quite a complex tactical system that he was trying to implement that probably required specific players, all of which Norwich City probably didn't have. And all of that, you look at those three, there's not really much there in terms of strands that connects them, in terms of playing style, in terms of even outlook with young players. I think maybe you could even have an argument that some of the decisions that was taken in the last 12 months around older players and contracts and stuff, that's going to, as it did sort of pre-2017, that's probably going to prove costly to them in the next few years. But this is why I want to rewind sort of almost to the recruitment process to hire Farup, who we know was first choice and was the one that they wanted all along. And they obviously had to do due diligence because there was a little bit of doubt with work permits and whatnot. And they had to go through an exemptions panel and build up a big, almost like a dossier of references to make the case as to why he was such a special talent that he needed a work permit, which obviously was agreed. And I'm sure that, you know, managing in European competitions and beating some of the clubs, I think was it Fenerbahce they beat? Pretty hit 6-1, I think. I mean, those type of things would have helped their cause. But to go back to the process, Sam, I think this sort of buys into what we were speaking about. You look at the three coaches who seemingly sort of were at the back end of that process. Farup, who obviously has got the job. Will Still, who 31, again played young players at Reims. He was a bit more pragmatic because he had to be in the league that he was in, but there were some signs there of pretty good possession-based football. And Pascal Janssen, who has operated with a team that hasn't had an average age over 24 throughout his time at AZ Alkmaar, and was very youth heavy, albeit that's kind of the policy of the club. So there is clear alignment, I think, between the three, which is obviously young players, which has been picked up on a lot. It's that style of football that we speak about in terms of being attractive, and that's what Ben Napper spoke about when he came to the club, being the protagonist, controlling the ball. But I think there's a third one as well, which has gone slightly under the radar. They're three coaches who have, in different circumstances, kind of operated almost above the station. They punched above their weight in terms of the resources that they've had. You look at Farup at Nordsjælland, they were competing with teams who had probably, you know, significantly more in terms of budget. Alkmaar also, and Will Still did at Reims as well. So there are strands there, and I guess this hints back to that process, doesn't it, that we've spoken about so much for the last 2 years on this podcast. There does now seem to be a solid process, and the fact that almost you can connect the three coaches that made that final process should be really positive.
Yeah, I think the main thing I take from that is that now Ben Napper's vision of how football should be is going to dictate how the club is run. And I think since that Farker and Weber duo dissolved, there was a bit too much of a sense that not everyone was pulling in the same direction. And although the goals might have been similar in terms of staying in the Premier League when Dean Smith first arrived and then getting back up there thereafter, the ways that everyone at the club wanted to achieve it did feel quite splintered and quite different, and there didn't seem to be the same level of unity that there was behind the scenes when Farker and Weber were at their best. But there clearly is an attempt now to get everyone back on the same page, and that's why these coaches have strengths that you referenced there that Napa has talked about before. You know, as you said, he talked about the fact that he likes to watch football where teams are in control and where they have a lot of possession and they play attacking football and attractive football. He also has spoken about the importance of young players, and even in the behind the scenes video with Thorup, I think he actually spoke to him about how big of a pillar that is in the way that the club operates. So, yeah, I think that ideology is now, or they're at least attempting to make it run through the club. And you could see that with the coaches that were in the final stages of that process. And it is encouraging, but now we need to see it over a consistent sort of basis. As we saw with that, the early part of Weber's tenure, it's easy to stick to an ideology when everything's going well. And it's easy to say every head coach we have from now on is going to play like Daniel Farke, when actually there's no need to replace Daniel Farke. It's then when that crunch point happens and when you have to deal with adversity that has to stand up. And I don't think actually when Stuart Weber was at the helm, they stuck to their principles enough, really. It felt like after that first relegation, which wasn't particularly devastating given I think everyone expected Norwich to get relegated, and they didn't really spend much money at all on transfers, I think they let that impact their ideology a little bit too much. So yes, there are encouraging signs, but we are very early on in the project, and Napa will probably be tested most if and when the crunch point happens and when it isn't going for him, and then we'll see that. But the early signs are very good. He stuck to everything that he said he would in his sort of interviews, and yes, he looks like somebody who wants to take time over his decisions, but once he reaches those decisions, he's happy to take action. And so far it looks really promising. I'm looking forward to seeing how that actually turns out in the long term, because that's when it'll be tested.
Yep, agreed. I mean, it's interesting, Paddy, isn't it, on this sort of idea of projects. There's a couple of points I'd raise around this, and I'll throw over to you. But lots of quotes in Denmark from Johannes Ofrup about taking this opportunity. You referenced earlier the fact that these conversations have been ongoing for months. I know that sort of in the final game or so, or just before the final game, I think he was talking about Nordsjælland and speaking about the type of project that it would need to tempt him away from that. And he was talking about how exciting it would have to be. He even put a time limit on, didn't he, in an interview since he's taken the Norwich job, which I think was in Bold, was it, in Denmark. And he spoke about sort of two-year projects and all this stuff. And this brings me back to sort of my second point, because seeing a lot of comparisons in terms of, well, this is going to feel a little bit like Farke's first season at Norwich, which everyone knows how that ended. They finished below Ipswich. Had it not been for James Maddison and his goals, goodness knows where they would have been, even as late as into the opening month or so of that 18-19 campaign, where they went to Ipswich. And if they'd have lost that game, he could have been replaced as Norwich City's head coach. So do you feel it's going to be, and very, very early to kind of put this question on you, so I apologise, but do you kind of see, given everything that we've spoken about in terms of processes and almost realigning the vehicle again to get it in a direction, does it feel like Norwich and the fans as well are going to have to swallow another season like that? Or do you think there is a better base here to build from, or is it too early to say?
Probably too early to say, but equally, it feels there is a more sustainable base, because, you know, you go back to that 17-18 period. What was one of Weber's first acts? I think it was essentially culling seven or eight experienced players, John Rudy, Ryan Bennett, financially driven. You know, the Maddison sale at the end of that season really kept the wolf from the door. You know, that could have been a very difficult place Norwich found themselves in terms of the finances. That doesn't feel the case now. You might argue, you look at the last set of published accounts and tens of millions of pounds in debt payments, but we know that there is a process ongoing higher up now in terms of the Atanasio group, that it feels that the stability is there financially now, that group are there, they're the backstop, if you like. So that's a key difference for me between the two eras, or the start of the two eras.
Facilities wise as well?
Absolutely, yeah. Night and day, yeah. So the infrastructure is, you know, I read a piece today and talking about it, basically Thorup has left Denmark and he's come to a place where the training facilities are on a par with anything in Denmark, even the top clubs in Denmark. They are that good. And you can see that. You can see that in terms of the infrastructure around Colney. That has to aid it. But I think also, and there's an asterisk here, because we're at the start of, not even officially open, the transfer window. We don't quite know what the shakedown will be in terms of which players depart. There will be players depart this summer, you know, key players previously. And that'll be driven in part by financial considerations, maybe what the players and their representatives feel is right now at this stage of their careers. So you can't say definitively, but it also feels like he's inheriting a better group. And below, players are currently in the first team group, maybe one or two others as well in terms of the academy who are just ready to make that transition across. You know, Ken Albo springs to mind, and we know there's a contract situation ongoing there, which feels like it's going to end in a positive manner from a Norwich perspective. So I think you look at some of the key indicators and you draw a parallel with 17-18 when Farke walked through the door to, join Weber. And I think it is different, radically different, from the financial picture to the infrastructure to where they are in terms of their player cycle. You know, it's not shifting a lot of, without being unkind, deadwood and starting again. And almost Farke being tasked with bringing in Jamal Lewis's, Max Aaron's, Ben Godfrey, that cohort. You know, there's players in and around this group now, the likes of Liam Gibbs, the likes of John Rowe at present, Kellen Fisher, you know, Ken Abbo, Finlay Welsh, Abu Kamara, of course, coming back from Portsmouth, Brad Hills, if we want to go down that route as well, Adeboy Aiga. You know, there's raw material there which are further ahead in their development than a Max was, than a Jamal was. So, yeah, I think it is different. I think it is different. And as a result, I don't really see a 15th place finish as we got with Farke, and probably more bad than good in terms of on the pitch in that first season. I think we'll see far more positive signals. What that translates to in terms of league finish, you know, so many factors in play there, that some are in Norwich's control, some that aren't. But I mean, we discussed it on the drive up here today. I mean, top half finish, I think, isn't unreasonable. How high up the table will be dictated by some of those factors. But certainly, I don't think, it's hard to see with everything I've just said there, that we're going to end up in a situation where, you know, Norwich aren't in and around the playoff picture well into this coming season. They might fall short, but I think if there's enough signs of progress, as Thorup said in that Danish interview, it's not a free pass he gets in his debut season, but he doesn't necessarily think he'll be criticised if they don't get anywhere near the top six shake-up. But I think he also knows, and he said it in that interview, season after, they really do need to be in a position where they are pushing. So, you know, what does that hint at? So far, we've heard the word patience a lot, and I think it will be. You'll hear that increasingly now when we get back to pre-season and Thorup's here and he's doing media and Riddersholm and maybe Ben Napper, you know, patience, because they know that it's outwardly that message needs to get through with the fan base, and they need to bring them on a journey, as Weber and Farke did in 17-18.
Yeah, and as you've already outlined, it's all very well and good being aligned, but you have to be aligned for a period of time to build. And then that is the process kind of we're at with Norwich again, where the parachute payments are up. As you referenced, there are going to be sales this summer, potentially even, you know, plural of major sales. So there is going to be a requirement to almost try and pick up what's left and mould it into something that is capable of then going in the Championship. What that looks like and how good enough it is to go and apply itself in a Championship, which by common consensus feels like it's going to be weaker at this stage. But again, we're sort of speaking before the transfer window's officially open, and you don't know who's going to do what and whatnot. But it does feel that way with the clubs coming down. So all of those elements could make it a better base for Norwich to build off. But again, we'll probably wait until we sit down just before the season in terms of our official predictions pod to delve into that. But one thing I did want to mention, Sam, and Paddy's just referenced him there, Glenn Riddersholm, hopefully I've not butchered that either. We'll learn to deal with these names as and when, I'm sure. Vastly experienced assistant head coach that Thorup has brought with him. Won the league as boss of Midtjylland. He's worked pretty exclusively, really, barring a spell at Genk, as a head coach. He's been the leading man, most recently in Sweden, in the top flight as late as, was it November, December, I think. This is a vastly experienced character. Someone, again, who's very good with young players. Interestingly, they've never worked together before, and it seems to be a relationship that's been put together partially by Norwich, partially by obviously those two guys, and also by agents as well. So it is an interesting dynamic, because I think we're all used to head coaches, particularly in the modern game, moving and bringing five or six staff with them pretty exclusively everywhere. Narcis Pallas is still at the club, Andy Hughes is still at the club, Paul Clements is obviously still at the club as well. It's only really, the only example I can think of certainly recently in England is Ange Postecoglou, in terms of going in a club and maybe not bringing loads of staff with you. So what do you make of his appointment, and I guess the staff dynamic more generally?
Yeah, I find it really, really interesting, and I think had it not been for how Napa's acted so far this summer, I might have worried it was sort of complacency, because I think we have seen in the last few years, maybe with some of the more behind-the-scenes roles, a few too many internal promotions and not enough perhaps due diligence done around those names. So when you see that the likes of Pelash and Hughes and Paul Clements are going to still be around the group, and Thorpe isn't going to be bringing too many of his own staff to Carrow Road, there is a temptation to suggest that maybe that isn't the same sort of alignment on philosophy that I was talking about earlier. But we know from how decisive Napa was with the action over Wagner and with the older players who have now departed the club as free agents, that if he felt that was the way to do it, he would have done it, and he would have done the due diligence to really assess that. So, you know, I think it's about how much trust you have in him, and if you have a lot of trust in him, then it's a good sign, because he clearly feels that they're people who can be in the club. And it's the same with Riddlesholm, who I wish they'd released a pronunciation guide for. But yeah, I think overall that's a really encouraging appointment because of that experience, as you say. And I'm not somebody who just sits here and shouts about experience either with players or coaches. And I know there were still some fans who wanted that.
Sorry to interject, but I think I might have spoken about this before, and it was Gary Rowett does a very good podcast with Dave Carolan, who used to work at Norwich as a fitness coach, and he was speaking about Gary Rowett was speaking about experience and how, yeah, not how it's overrated, but how he maybe thinks it's going to evolve away from age, which is what it is now when, yeah, we talk about experience, but also, you know, how many jobs someone has, and certainly from a playing perspective, more to sort of tactical understanding and game intelligence. And I guess there is a degree that, and both have spoken about sort of working abroad, so I guess there is leaning into that kind of old experience, but the fact there is sort of a connection in terms, yeah, of their work and what Riddlesholm has done throughout his career is positive as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a nice balance, rather than just basing everything off experience as they did last season. It's having someone in there who has only been a head coach for 16, 17 months alongside somebody who has a lot of experience in that role and will have come into a lot of the situations that Thorpe will face as Norwich head coach that are completely new to him, and Riddlesholm can help him with that. So I think it's a nice blend, and as you said, there is still a connection there, even if they haven't explicitly worked together before. So yeah, I think it is encouraging. It's also nice to see from a Norwich perspective that he's still very excited about it, and I read some quotes that are, I think, available on our channel now with Riddlesholm, that he seemed very excited about it as well. And as somebody who's won leagues as a head coach and has that much experience, it shows you how much of a draw Norwich City is, and the Championship still is, for somebody who's had that high calibre of a job and still feels that this is somewhat of a dream to be at Carrow Road. So for a lot of reasons, that one works out. I think the Pelash, Hughes, Clements situation is one that we'll have to watch evolve, because like the players that he'll be receiving, Thorpe will want to sort of assess those and whether he can work with those within his ideology. But I think my overall takeaway from that is that if Napa felt they didn't marry up with the ideology and the direction that Norwich are going with, he would easily have dispensed with them. So I think a lot of it will be up to Thorpe, but yeah, probably a situation that we'll have to watch evolve over a little bit of time.
Yeah, just very, very quickly, Pad, to conclude part one, but your thoughts on Riddlesholm coming across as well, as we've discussed there, clearly vastly experienced. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't there? We're sort of pairing a coach, as Sam mapped out, who's been a head coach for kind of 15, 16 months, with someone who's done it for significantly longer.
It is. And again, you know, time will tell whether that was a very astute move by all the parties. Yeah. Thorpe again has made it clear that it was almost Norwich presented that as an idea, as a concept, and he ran with it. There is an interesting interview that he's been asked about, does he feel threatened by that? You know, that you've got this experienced guy in the background, you haven't worked with him in a professional capacity, you probably haven't had too much of a relationship with him on an interpersonal level up until this point. And I think his answer, paraphrasing, was along the lines of not even entered his head, that he's had long conversations with this guy now, he feels they're on the same page, he understands that there are areas where Glenn has built his reputation, you know, the youth development and linking that into the first team, that he'll need to lean into. And to me, it shows from Thorpe's perspective quite a lot of you know, self-assurance, that he doesn't, yes, feel threatened, yeah, by that. You know, it'd be easier to go the other way. So that tells me there's a lot of self-belief about his methods and his own abilities, and he's very willing, if he thinks this could give him an edge, and he's took on board what Norwich have said to him in those conversations. And then it's a case, as you mapped out, you know, trying to find somebody who maybe fitted that profile. And I'm pretty sure if he hadn't have got that good vibe from the various conversations he'd had with Riddersholm, that he wouldn't be coming in as a number two. So, you know, I don't think this is something that's been imposed on him. It was a suggestion put to him. He's clearly embraced it, maybe seen the value in it. And again, that chimes with what I think he said in his club interview, where he doesn't have all the answers. It's not all about him coming in from day one. We're going to do this, 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 and you will row in with me. He wants to hear other ideas. He wants to take on board other ideas. You know, that collegiate kind of way of operating. And again, that's probably a little bit different to a Wagner and a Smith type of coaching output. And for me, if I'm, you know, anything to do with Norwich, and you feel that this guy's coming in and wants to listen, wants to learn from you, not the other way around, it's not a one-way process, that empowers people around him. So, I think this time will tell, but clearly they feel there's enough common ground between them that this can work. And, you know, it may not prove to be the case, as it might not prove to be the case with inheriting Hughes, Clements, Pelatch. If I'm honest, the cynic in me, I'll be surprised if all three of them are still in post by the end of this season, just because of the nature of the business and the beast. But for now, that continuity probably is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, and the final point I'd make on Riddersholm, I don't know if he'll thank me for this necessarily, but there's some brilliant pictures of him in a gold suit with a cigar after he won the league against FC Michelin, which is well worth a look. I think they're pretty well known in Denmark for that reason. So yeah, well worth checking them out. Join us for part two in a second. We're going to be chatting about Jose Cordoba and probably a few more transfer related tidbits as well. See you in a sec. Welcome back. You're listening to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast here at the Prince of Denmark pub. I know, we're hilarious and it's very well thought through. It's all thanks to this man to my right, Adam Harvey, has joined us off the subs bench for the second half of the show. We're going to be talking about Jose Cordoba and the transfer stuff more. Jeremy, I asked the other two, Adam, so how are you doing? How's your summer been and your detox, I guess, from the full-on championship season?
Yeah, I think it was needed, to be honest. It got to that point where it was like, you know, the season gets tough the last few weeks and it's, you know, sort of waiting for that bit of a break. Not that it's really been as quiet as maybe you'd have wanted, you know, in the sense of obviously the managerial change and Jose Cordoba's arrival and lots of other good stuff, but it's kept us busy. And I think, you know, I'm not someone that deals very well with quiet periods particularly. I always want to have something to do, so... Yeah, it's been good. Shame the weather's not been a little bit nicer. I was sort of hoping that I could maybe go and work out in my garden or something of that nature. But obviously, typical English weather, it's been chuck it down with rain. So, but luckily, it's dry at the moment. So we're out here and doing a podcast record.
Yeah, if it can stay dry for about 25 minutes or so, that would be greatly appreciated. We did have a burst of sunshine in part one, but that's long since disappeared. Let's chat about Jose Cordoba then, gents, because and we kind of touched upon this right at the start of the pod, Sam, and you referenced it. I wrote a piece about this morning. You think about certainly over the last 5 years, I think 2018, the first signing through the door was Emi Buendia after relegation when they wanted to get some South American bodies in and athleticism. The first permanent signing, Isaac Hayden was the first official signing, but he doesn't quite fit the thing of what I'm talking about. So we'll go. First permanent signing was Gabriel Sara from South America. And then obviously this time it's been Jose Cordoba. So his addition, what does it tell us about where Norwich City are at and probably more importantly where they want to go? Because this is a Panamanian, and from what I can work out, and I've tried to do a lot of research here, I'm sure someone will have the answer. I know there's a guy in non-league who is of who's played for Panama under 20s and is a Panamanian national who has played football in England. But professionally, I think Jose Cordoba is going to be the first Panamanian to play professionally in England, which is remarkable, really. But they've plucked him out of Bulgaria, which is again quite obscure, very data led. I guess this is the new era that we can expect, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of double intelligent when you put together the Panama and the Bulgaria elements of it. And yeah, in a lot of ways, it does feel not only in terms of the profile of the player, but also the way that he was found. That is what Norwich City are going to represent. Going forward, and for a bit, I think that is what they represented. You know, you mentioned Buendia there, and he was one of several signings made on originally the back of data. And obviously, once you establish that strength and that player that you want to then go and follow, obviously you will then go and watch them in full matches and things like that. But I think a lot of Norwich's best signings, and probably the best signings in English football in recent years, have been data-led, so that is an encouraging sign. I don't think it's a surprise for anyone, given Napa's background, and we've obviously spoken a lot about him, and recruitment is completely led by him at the moment, so I don't think anyone will be surprised. But we know Norwich, not just in Napa's tenure, but predating that, have been trying to improve their data output and the you know, how much they use it internally. So yeah, not really a surprise to see that. But I think both in terms of that and the fact that he's a sort of a young centre back who is a decent athletic profile, a pretty good age, and is, you know, comfortable on the ball. I think that pretty much represents what Napa is going after this summer. I think the one area where maybe he doesn't quite look like maybe some of the players who will follow him into the door is financially, and sort of the sums being talked about. I would be surprised if Norwich spend that amount too many times if again this summer. But with
or anything, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. So I don't think it sets the tone in that sort of way. But then you look at, I mean, even Christos Scholes already out the door for a reported £3 million fee. You can see where that sort of works out. So, yeah, that's the one thing where I'd say it will probably look a little bit different, and they'll try to save a lot of money on frees and loans, and be clever in that way. But other than that, yeah, pretty much, I think, exactly what we all expected Ben Napa to do this summer, and the sort of player that he expected to look at. So, yeah, I think there is still, and we'll probably come on to his strengths and weaknesses, but he's not the finished product, and that development is something that I think we'll see at Norwich more. I think Thorup actually described it as an obsession when he was working at Norgeland, with developing players, with improving players. And when you're trying to save money and also lower the age profile of the squad, having coaches and people at the club who are committed to developing players is important. So I think we'll see a lot who arrive as maybe not the finished product. And in that sense, Cordoba fits in very well. So, yeah, a lot of factors. It feels like he does represent what this new Norwich City is going to be about. And, yeah, I'm pretty excited to see who follows him in.
Yeah, I think there's a few strands for him to speak about, Adam. And the first one I would speak at is, obviously, clearly they lost Ben Gibson, who I think we saw actually latterly, and obviously had to deal with some unbelievably challenging personal circumstances throughout last season. But I think even performance-wise, probably showed a level of consistency that we hadn't really seen since his first year there. And it's, you know, everything is pointing to him returning to Stoke. But there was obviously, as Sam mapped out, a financial element behind that decision to let him go, maybe more so than a footballing one. So they needed someone there anyway. Add in someone who's obviously just turned 23. There's a youth there, but we all know in the game, particularly in the modern game, just how sought after left-sided centre-backs are. They're difficult to find, but if you can find a good one, you can nurture them, and as Sam said, you can maybe curve some of them rough edges. And he has looked a little bit like David Luiz in some of the videos that I've watched, but we all know the dangers of going down YouTube supercut rabbit holes. If they can get it right, he is someone that could pretty quickly become an asset for them.
Yeah, if you look at kind of his size and even watching those clips, there's clearly a level of aggression there. I mean, obviously, I spoke to a Bulgarian journalist more about him, who's somebody who's watched him a little bit more in the flesh, which obviously, of course, I very much doubt anybody of a Norwich City persuasion would have seen him in the flesh. Maybe there is somebody watching this that has, but he sort of spoke about maybe just sort of those things that do need to be nurtured. You know, there is going to be games where maybe there is going to be susceptible to a mistake, and it's about trying to how he bounces back from that. And the training pitch, I think, is going to be a key facet maybe of his development now moving forwards. You know, there is a lot of good stuff there to work with, but there's also stuff that needs to be improved. You know, he's young. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of time ahead of him, I suppose, now until he maybe is the finished article. But, you know, you look at him as a player and the price Norwich have paid for him. You know, if they can get him to a level where he is one of the best players in the Championship, you know, I mean, central defenders that are left-footed and good with the ball, particularly kind of now in the Premier League, where a lot of sides strive to try and have ball-playing centre-backs, you know, there's a financial gain there for Norwich to be had, or hopefully if they do get to the Premier League and he's still part of their setup, then they've got a player there that, you know, is fully capable. But I think it is probably about managing expectations this season with him. You know, there is going to be moments where, you know, he is going to be, you know, making a mistake. Not that, you know, Shane Duffy or Ben Gibson with their experience didn't make mistakes at different points last season. So I think, you know, that probably eradicates that slightly. But, you know, over time, hopefully, you know, with this, you know, manager that who weds him to a certain way of playing, which I think is what suits him and what he's been used to as well previously, you know, it feels like everything matches and the data is good and the age profile is good. So, yeah, fingers crossed it's one that's going to be in the good addition bucket rather than, you know, some of the ones that we've had maybe down the years where the hype's been really good and then they haven't quite lived up to it.
Yeah, and I think on data points, centre-backs in particular, and obviously Norwich have followed Brighton, really. They have people who sort of are almost positional scouts and they identify certain... They've got a striker-specific one, for example, and a midfield one, and I'm sure they've got a defensive one as well. But there is obviously some data points that you can look at, but with centre-backs, because so much of their work is often about how they are off the ball and whatnot as well, there is a degree of kind of conventional scouting that you need to apply to that, which I'm sure would have been done. It was interesting in Ben Napper's quotes, how he spoke about how they've watched him for a long period of time and whatnot. And if you're kind of going through that process, I mean, he was in Spain, wasn't he, for a little bit, then went to Bulgaria. It's been quite an interesting career path that he's had, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he adapts to English football. And another point, Sam, we've spoken about kind of the economics behind it and the profile behind it. I think one point I'd raise as well is that he's taken one of Norwich City's kind of Brexit slots, so to speak. They get a certain amount. I don't know how many exactly they've got to play with at the moment, but it's a maximum of four, dependent on kind of minutes that you give English players. I think they've definitely got two or three from what I can work out, potentially even more than that. But from what I gather, this is the first one that they've kind of used to take one of those slots. And again, it shows how much they wanted him, didn't it? And that's before we even get into the dynamic of Rangers and I think there was interest from elsewhere as well. They've had to fight really hard. I remember someone telling me, I think it might have been the second week of kind of all of these reports coming out that if they sign him, they'd have done really well to get him because of the level of interest in him. And I think he was one of the best defenders in Bulgaria last year and whatnot. All of that is really interesting around this signing, but particularly that use of the Brexit slot, because that identifies somebody that they think can come in and make a real difference. And again, a player that 12 months ago, slightly longer than that, they wouldn't have been able to sign.
Yeah, he's clearly somebody they rate very highly. And I think probably a lot of that will be the fact that he is a left-footed centre-back, which is rare. And the list of players that they would have liked to bring in is probably not as long as maybe it is even at right centre-back or in midfield, where there is an abundance of players and where it's easier to identify sort of players. So I think the fact that... I mean, they would have gone into the summer knowing that a left centre-back was a real priority and maybe wasn't the easiest signing they had to make, because they aren't especially common, they aren't especially cheap. And to tick this one off as their first one, and this early on in the summer as well, I think they'll be delighted. So, yeah, it's no surprise to me that they've stuck their neck out a little bit and tried a little bit harder to sign a player in that position, that they've spent that money on him and used that Brexit slot, because I think that was both one of the most important areas they had to sign for, because it's one where they've, you know, you have to remember they've lost somebody who started, and that wasn't too common in the list of players who they let go. That's pretty much left back and left centre back were the only real areas where that was the case in that retained release list. So yeah, I think it makes sense, not just because of what a good player Cordoba is and how long they've tracked him, but also because of how much they needed somebody like him in that position. And I think it tells you a lot about their priorities going into this summer. But when a lot of homework has been done on recruitment, you do tend to hear these lines about them watching them for a really long time. And I think that in some senses is encouraging, especially given how quickly he's sort of come out of the ether and become somebody from a player who was struggling to get games with Celta Vigo's reserve team at one point. So yeah, for them to have had their eye on him as early as they seemingly did shows the quality of that scouting department and the quality of their digging at the moment, which I think bodes well, because yeah, given the financial situation we've talked about, the number of players they're likely to need, I think they'll probably need some more of that excellent finding of players in far corners and maybe in places where a lot of clubs aren't looking.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as much we, and you said it earlier a little bit, in terms of him being probably setting the tone for what they want to do and the new direction of travel, and in terms of profile and like you say, the way that they've executed kind of the transfer, I guess, that there is an element of that. He's most definitely going to be an outlier in terms of money spent, I suspect, certainly before a major sale. I'm not sure I see Norwich City spending a fee until, maybe at all, but definitely until they shift one of those players on, which probably leads us into our next conversation, really, Adam, which is, When we talk about that, I think we're talking about a group of three. I'd probably extend it to four, but I think three main ones that people will talk about: John Rowe, Josh Sargent, Gabriel Sarah, and I'd probably chuck Angus Gunn in there as well. I think there's particularly with the Euros coming up, and you know, goodness knows what stage that is to really perform into, but also his contractual situation, which we've mapped out as well, which he's now entering the final 12 months of his deal, which he signed then as a Premier League player. Where are you at in terms of those guys? What's your, again, we're not basing this on anything, I just want purely your gut instinct. Who do you feel is the one, or maybe two, that feel most likely to go at this moment in time? Sat here with the calendar just ticked over into June and realising that come the end of the window, you might look very silly, but you don't mind that.
I think John Rowe's maybe the one I'd have as a shoe-in to depart. Just feel probably him personally, from every sort of dealings we've ever had with him, there's an inner confidence within him that he can go and compete at the top level. And I think probably you look at like Premier League clubs of a Brentford level or a Brighton level, he probably feels like a player that could go into that kind of setup and maybe kick on a little bit James Maddison-esque, where maybe, you know, he's proved himself at a Championship level over a season, and you know, he's English, he's young, there'll be a big fee attached to him. But also, conversely, you know, there's been Norwich players of that ilk previously. You know, look at the Murphys that maybe they've sold for a high value, and maybe they haven't then gone and kicked on. So I just feel maybe now, with his stock being quite high and a price that Norwich can probably demand for him, given his contractual situation as well, I just feel like that's probably one that, if he was to go, obviously wish him all the best. But I think the latter stage of last season, he wasn't at his best. Obviously, there was the comeback from the injury, and it was trying to get back up to speed, and you know, maybe certain things didn't go in his favour, but. Yeah, I think he's maybe the one I look at. I think Josh Sargent's an interesting one as well. You know, obviously signed a relatively new deal, but you know, you look at kind of his injury history, there's a few sort of concerns for me with that. And you know, you sort of look at maybe the relationship he struck with Ashley Barnes. Is, you know, Torup going to go down a route of playing Ashley Barnes? It's obviously a completely different situation where he's even going to be here at all. So maybe he's one that I could see being a lot of interest maybe as well from like the lower echelons of the Premier League. So I think, yeah, those two maybe I think are the ones where if Norwich do sell, I could see, you know, that being viable. I think Sarah's probably the one that I look at and think he's probably going to be happy here. He suits the Torup system a lot more. And if you can keep hold of him for one more season, almost Emi Buendia-esque when they came down to the Championship and it was like, give us one more season, like we'll let you go if, you know, if we fail to meet our objectives, or, you know, you want to kick on and do something else. And obviously they did that summer, and you know, fortunately for Emi, it's not really worked out since. Or hopefully, you know, for him, maybe next season, come back from injury, it will. But I just think maybe they can give him that option. Come on, give us one more year, Gabby. You know, you're gonna play in a team that's gonna suit you. So he's the one. I just feel maybe if they can. But then again, you look at the fee they could probably command, and you know, if there's Premier League interest, that's gonna be really tough for him to turn down. Because you know, I think he spoke maybe when he came to England about wanting to play in the Premier League, and you know, that's where every player wants to get to. And I'm sure that's no different for him. But I also just feel, you look at his levels this season, I think he can probably kick on even more next season, and maybe Norwich can command a similar, if not higher, fee. So he's the one. But then Gunny, yeah, obviously contractually as well, so all in play. But again, Gunny, I just think, you know, you look at him as a goalkeeper, you really want a goalkeeper between the sticks that you can trust. And I just think with him and what he's done for the club and his dad's kind of previous, you know, with the club as well, maybe they can just convince him for one more season as well. So yeah, but who knows? As you said, you know, this is all irrelevant. This is personal opinion. So, you know, Ben Naffer's got to deal with that. And come the end of August, who will be here will be here, and who won't be, won't be.
Yeah, I'm probably with you. I'm probably leaning Rowe as the most likely, if I was to rank them at this moment in time. And it's just ticked over to June. And actually, the most links, even for us saying this, has been with Sarah so far, really, because, well, we've had Roma and Palace, and that was before the calendar had ticked into June. But it feels to me like Rowe feels the most likely, then probably Sargent, then probably Sarah, then probably Gunn. If I was to have to rank the four at this stage, with the caveat as usual that things change, and you know, it might get to July and suddenly Norwich get to a stage where, not that they panic, but they definitely do need to make a sale at some stage. So that becomes an interesting dynamic. Sam, do you rank them the same? Do you feel slightly differently?
No, I think it's pretty much exactly the same. And although that probably isn't offering too much more, yeah, it just feels like, especially given how the players have spoken about things, Rowe clearly has incredibly high ambitions, and as Adam spoke about, the confidence that he can go and achieve those things. I think the level of noise around Sargent, and maybe the way that he's spoken previously, suggests that he would be quite open to a move. And you know, given some of the form he's shown when fit in the last couple of seasons, it's hard to begrudge him that, really, especially when he's been in two teams that have been struggling. He spent a lot of his time at the club in sort of different roles and struggling for for coaches to really get the best out of him. So I don't think you can really hold that against him. Then Sarah, you know, as you said, feels like he might be slightly more likely to stay, but when the number of clubs and the size of clubs that have got him on their radar are going to be circling for several months, obviously it feels quite possible that he leaves. And then with Gunn, yeah, it probably depends a lot on the level of interest, because goalkeepers do tend to go under the radar a little bit. He probably is, although he's a very fantastic goalkeeper, slightly easier to replace than these players who can just produce something out of nothing like Sarah. But, you know, he is somebody who maybe doesn't take the headlines as much as those other three, and he might have to save a couple of penalties at the Euros to put himself in decent contention of a Premier League move. But yeah, it feels, you know, as you've both said, really like probably at least one or two of them will leave, but right now it's quite hard to predict who they are. It feels like that might, and a couple of the situations might drag on pretty late. So yeah, definitely a very fluid situation. As you've said, it's one where Norwich probably do need to sell one or two at least, and it's one to keep an eye on. But yeah, in terms of how you've ranked that, I think that's spot on, yeah.
And that's before we can even get into Adam Eder and him and Celtic. But I think there's going to be plenty said and plenty written and plenty happen with that over the summer. I did want to just close the pod speaking about another topic, which I think I've seen sort of discussed in different areas, which is the experience that is in Norwich City's dressing room. We've spoken about this already. It's Shane Duffy, Ashley Barnes. I think they've still got a pretty significant number of players over 30 at this stage. And for all of kind of the attention that has been pushed on to Furup and young players, I think it's worth highlighting this. I've got the Norwegian squad in front of me here that he had last season. I mean, the two goalkeepers, Andreas Hansen and Carl-Johan Eriksen, and albeit goalkeepers, as we know, age-wise, they play for longer and they're probably a little bit better as they get older as well. So 28 and 29, so not what you would call, they've not tipped over the wrong side of 30 yet, but they are experienced keepers, you would say. But I think the defensive one is interesting, probably more so when we're looking at Shane Duffy, and lots of debate around the type of role that he might play. But you look at his captain at Norwich, and that was Kian Hansen. He's 35. He had Erik Marken, who was 33. I think there was a pretty experienced fullback in there as well. They had Jeppe Tarasov, who was a defensive midfielder, who was in his 30s as well. So there is evidence there, Adam, that he has and will, and I'm sure as he gets to Norwich will as well, these experienced players can have a role to play. Someone like Ashley Barnes, okay, he might not start every week. It might be a slightly different role there is for him, but there could still be a role for him to play.
Yeah, I think the balance is probably something we've spoken around a lot. You know, you look at go back a couple of seasons, the back end of sort of Dean Smith, David Wagner season. Wagner spoke at length kind of about maybe that lack of mentality, that lack of experience in the group, and maybe in adversity they struggled to come through it because of, you know, the youthful nature of that side. Last season, you know, I think it's pretty well documented they tipped probably too far in the other direction, and there was almost too many players that were, you know, of that experienced nature. And, you know, there is no, for Norwich and the model they operate in, you know, there's no sell on value really for these players, and they command higher wages, and they probably went, yeah, too far the other way. Obviously, they've now managed to ship some of those off the books, you know, Forshaw in January, Danny Bart's gone now, Ben Gibson's gone, you know, lots of these kind of experienced pros. But I think there is definitely a place for, you know, some of these in this squad, you know, because you look at the sides that have had success in the Championship, none of them are really just built solely on youth. You have got to have that sort of leadership group, and Norwich have got plenty of those characters, you know, the likes of Kenny McLean that's been there and done it a few times, Ashley Barnes, of course, experienced with Premier League and Championship, Shane Duffy as well, you know, played international football. I think it's crucial they do keep hold of some of these. Obviously, it's maybe just about balancing it all out and sort of how they maybe approach it in terms of a starting 11 and who maybe retains themselves on the bench. Obviously, that's up to Johannes Torf to sort. But yeah, I feel maybe if they could get one or two off the books just to free up a little bit in terms of the wage bill and also try and help them shift that dynamic slightly, then I think there's a place for that. But also, you know, I think it's, you know, absolutely crucial they do retain some of them, just for the reasons I outlined. I think, you know, if they do struggle, maybe they have that difficult period, almost what they had this season, really, or this season just gone, you know, that spell where it's really tough and you need players to maybe pull those younger players through it. You know, Ashley Barnes, in terms of a character and everything we've ever sort of seen of him and dealt with him personally, feels like the kind of character that, you know, when things are tough, he'd maybe get your spirits back and, you know, sort of pull you through those moments. So, yeah, I would not be against some of these retaining, and come, you know, the start of August, you know, I'm hoping that a couple of those will still be in the building.
Yeah, I think Ashley Barnes is maybe a real pertinent example, because just because you maybe don't play every minute on the pitch, I think he's spoken about this as well before, to be fair, you can still be really good for the dressing room and still be a real influence in the dressing room and play a real part as well. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how they deal with that and how Torup deals with that, because there's a real core there of experienced players. And, you know, I spoke to Chris Sutton about this a few weeks ago, and he sort of said, as a player, the first few weeks for any new head coach or manager walking into the building are so important, because that is when opinions get made, and players, particularly the experienced ones, can take a judgment. And, you know, as you know, if you fall the wrong side of those ones, it can be very difficult, certainly in the early stages. I mean, Daniel Farker, Russell Martin, Cameron Jerome, you can list it. It can be very difficult to then kind of reshape the entire dressing room, really. So I think that's an interesting dynamic to watch. We're going to close the pod very finally, because we've got a summer transfer window ahead. We're going to do plenty more of these throughout. We obviously have the window watches as well that we host on YouTube. So one position, I'm not going to allow you any explanation. Obviously, we know left back, but what do you feel is the priority? So let's rule left back out, because I think that's a given. What is the priority position that you would like to see Norwich City strengthen? Adam, I'm going to come to you first.
Central defensive midfield.
Nice. Sam?
Classic, that one, isn't it? That's the easiest one. Striker.
Nice. Brilliant. That's a nice way. Oh, OK, I'll end. I'll say number 10. Then we've got a nice balance there. Excellent. Paddy, do you want to shout? What position? What position do you want to see Norwich add to over the summer? In a word? Not left back. Defensive midfielder as well. So two votes there. You can let us know as well. That's a nice place to finish the pod. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Enjoy, hopefully, the sunshine, which will appear at some point. And we'll be back at some point over the next few weeks for another podcast. See you then.